Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Mago and Claudia from Las Bravas on HBO Max. I'm sorry, but like, how can you have like an entire like female soccer team and no gays? I'm sorry. They're gay for each other, even though they're just besties right now. Here's hoping for a season two where they're actually gay.
Statistically speaking.
Right? Like, the math isn't mathing. I don't understand.
Bonjour, cabrona.
Hallo, coffee und Milch,
no.
Bitte.
No. Eric, get at that. All right.
I'm like, what's one I could do? Yeah, I don't know how to. Hello.
I can't. Okay.
Can you tell I'm learning German on Duolingo?
Is that what that was? I was like,
Auf Wiedersehen.
No.
What's the other word? Der
Scheiße.
Fräulein schlafen. The lady sleeps. I don't know much. Again. Can you tell?
Oui, monsieur.
Okay. Look at us. We are a multilingual podcast now. We don't just speak broken Spanish. We also speak broken French and broken German. Was good.
And broken English is our,
oh, dear
our
Lord.
Main job.
Yeah. That's the main language we speak is broken English. I oh love it. Yo. What is up?
Like a lot, but also like nothing. I really thought I was gonna have like the last few days of nothing to do, and I'm just busy anyways. I don't know, how does that ever happen to you? Or are you just like, oh yeah, I know, I'm gonna have a really low-key couple weeks and then it just doesn't happen?
I feel like as of lately my life has gotten really busy, just like family stuff and like, you know, my health and like having to do appointments and be a person in the world. It's like a lot, so I'm kind of just like tired all the time. I know that for the astrology gays there was like an eclipse in like Scorpio or something, so the Scorpio and Taurus people are like struggling right now, and I know I have a lot of Taurus placements, but I feel fine other than the regular I'm tired because of life, you know. Just regular, yeah. Days did
Mercury,
you
was in Gatorade or
yeah,
right?
it was in like reggaeton again, but like, how do you feel? Did you feel anything? I feel fine.
You know, the problem is that like, yes, I feel bad a lot all the time, but when I feel good, which is like today, I feel good. I forget,
yeah,
all of the bad, everything. You know, like that line in Euphoria that Rue says, like, when I'm happy, I feel like I'm never gonna stop being happy. Like, that's how I feel when I'm happy.
I think that's how it's supposed to be. I think like when you're happy, you're supposed to be like, you're actually happy, so you didn't even think about like any of the sadness. Like,
yeah,
that's a good thing. I think that's, yeah, how it should be.
I mean, it's not realistic. This will not last, but
you know. No, like the delusion is what's keeping you happy.
right.
It's like, ah, I'm delusion positive right now, and then, you know, a week from now you're like, nah.
Yeah, I forgot. Tears. My emotional breakdown from last week, literally. Yeah, I think, you know, what's keeping my spirits up a little bit is, one, all the rewatching and research that I've been doing for this episode. Very positive little episode. And
it is. We need this.
Yeah, for real. Escape with us today, my children.
My children.
So also, did you see the trailer for this new Netflix show called First Kill?
No, but I feel like all the gay people that I follow on Twitter did, and so including, yeah, you. So I'm like, absolutely. I don't feel like that lost. Tell me about it. Tell the class about it.
So, I mean, just from what I gathered, First Kill is basically like Twilight meets Romeo and Juliet, but with lesbians.
Oh my god. What?
Yeah.
Vampire gays? I mean, they've always been gay, but like,
gays and like also two houses divided a la Romeo and Juliet. And yeah, it's all very messy. I thought it was a movie, but it's a show.
Okay.
And I'm excited. I, you know, it'll be a nice little summer watch. I don't know why Netflix does like these horror gay
lesbians
things in the summer.
In the summer.
Remember last year?
I think it's because they think, like, people won't watch it. And I think the gays always live in the summer. I don't know. Maybe it's, like, a pride thing? I don't understand.
Oh, yeah, because it comes out, like, June 1st or something.
Oh, yeah, that's pride.
Nice. Okay, day one of that pride. Could be why.
That's probably why they do everything in the summer, because the gays are living in June, right? Like, June, everyone's gay. Everyone. Fair enough. We're all gay next month. Write it down, guys.
We have a couple of weeks left of being straight, and then we're going to be gay, okay? Okay.
Just for a month, though, okay?
Just for 1 month.
Take that gay shit off after a month.
July 1st, we're American.
Oh, yeah, we're Americans on July 1st. Dear Lord, that's fucking... As you can tell, I've been watching Los Bravos on HBO Max, and oh my god, dude. I love that show so much. Like, it is so Mexican, and it is so specific an experience, because it's not trying to be universal, and it makes it so, so relatable because of its specificity. And we love that here at CYC Podcast. It's very, like, Acapulco, very, like, actual Mexico, small town. Like, it's giving you small pueblito feelings, you know? And it's giving you the corruption of the pueblito. It's giving you, like, what houses and what homes really look like out there once they're, like, not kept. And, like, you know, there's perros sueltos everywhere. You know, like, it's, you know, there's
perros sueltos.
You see Jesus in the the wall, and everyone in the toast. Also, look, that's what I was going to reference to in the tortilla. And then everyone goes and prays to it. You know, like, it's very specifically one thing. And I really appreciate that it's like an episode of, like, Primer Impacto and, like, but a local version. Like, it's basically just an episode. It's hilarious, dude.
So is it gay, a la Los Spookies?
But not gay. Huh?
Is it a la Los Spookies, like that vibe?
More Mexican. So Los Spookies was giving you, like, West Coast California, Mexico City vibes. This is definitely giving you Pueblito en Acapulco vibes. Okay. Like, it's small town. There's perros sueltos.
Could I watch, like, this with my mom?
Yes, you can watch this with your mom. It's, like, mom. I would definitely say it's mom approved. I recommended it to my parents to watch. It is, like, you know, like... We were talking about this before. It is, like, so Mexican that there's ads to buy buy people's, like, old iron and old steel that's advertised from a moving vehicle with speakers on the outside. And that's how you know that you're in Mexico.
Yes.
It is that Mexican. That's why I'm like, no. It is, like, very Mexican. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, selling things or advertising things in a moving car with speakers on the outside, like, that's giving the kind of Mexico I know. So, and of course,
my Mexico, yeah.
Yes, it's like Pueblito vibes, you know, but it's also very beautiful. It's very, it has a lot of heart in it. It makes fun of itself. It's like, I would say, like, Ted Lasso, but Mexican.
Oh my god, I was just gonna say, is it Ted Lasso, but Mexican? Literally, yes. Took the words out of my brain. That's crazy.
And, you know, what's even better is that it's a female soccer team, and there are no gays yet, which is my only, like, gripe with them, but there's no gay, like, statistically, the math, not
female gays, yeah.
Yeah, there should be, like, 90% of that team should be gay girls, but whatever, it's not my business. I'm not here to whatever
crush rules, but yeah.
And they're definitely talking about, like, sexism I was gonna say football, but, like, in soccer, the sexism that's there, and, like, the double standard of women's sports. And I love women's sports. I watch the WNBA. I don't like American female soccer like that, but I do like WNBA. But, you know, it's just because my girlfriend likes all of them, so I'm a hater, and I'm just like, no, I don't like them, because you do on principle. That bitch is so cool. Like, they're all so cool. Anyways, but y'all should watch it. It's on HBO. There's only 6 episodes, and it's so good.
Glow, if you're listening, let's talk about which girls you like on the women's
team. You're like, DM me, we can compare crushes.
I, like, have one in mind, but I'm not gonna sit here. Anyways.
Okay. Because, you know, my hate for them is going to come right out. I'll be like, no, whatever.
Oh, my God.
That cool bitch with all that style. But, yeah. Oh, dude.
What's up?
Did you see what Cara Delevingne was doing?
Ah, God.
Ooh, she embarrasses herself.
so embarrassing. And this coming right after the news that she's going to be on the second season of Only Murders in the Building, which I was like, you know, would have loved for it to not be Cara Delevingne specifically, but I'll take it, you know, a little gay in that show. And then she comes out with all this, and now I'm just like, chinga la madre, you know what I'm saying?
Dude, she has, like, a history of being creepy to black women. Like, it's not just, like, Meg Thee Stallion that she's been creepy to. Like
I wonder
For y'all that don't understand, she's very, like, she was seen photographed and videotaped, like, this is the 90s, all over Meg Thee Stallion at the Billboard Awards, but it was giving very, like, where's my hug energy? It was giving very, like... Like, someone's not, like, someone doesn't love her, you know? Like, someone's not watching out for her and going, baby, do this after the cameras are off. Don't do it during. You took drugs before the show. I'm not saying she did, allegedly. This is all just, you know.
Allegedly.
It's all allegedly. It's bullshit, because I know she's powerful and connected. But because of that is the reason why I'm kind of really annoyed at her behavior, because she's done it to Azalea Banks. She's done it to Rita Ora. She's done it to Rihanna. Like, she's really weird around black women. And I'm just going to, like, say it when no one else wants to say it, is that, like, her family is literally, like, comes from British royalty. They literally made racism. I'm sure she's not racist, but she has a lot of, like, tendencies that she needs to go seek a therapist out. You know, like
a fetishism type of thing.
Yes, yeah. There's a fetish there. And, like, it's very obvious and very blatant to anyone watching that it's like, boo, seek help. I'm not saying you can't change or be different, but, like, you can. And you actually have all the access and the money to do it. So you should, you know? It's upsetting to see Meg have to put up with that, because I know just of how connected Cara Delevingne is, I don't think anyone would do anything to that girl just because of that. So
it's so weird to, like, be a spectator of it all, right? Because all we're gonna see is what we see.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the same time, like, there's a reason she was sitting next to Meg. Like, that stuff isn't, like, by accident. So yeah. I don't know. It's definitely
Or, like, more definitely connected to, like, media. And I'm thinking maybe, like, Meg wants to be connected to the media in that way to get, like, better press for herself. But it's, like, at the same time, it's, like, she has a history of this. This isn't, like, a new thing that she has only done to Meg. It's giving, like, creeper vibes. And, like, boo, just do better. Like, we're not saying that, like, you can't be better. You can. Obviously, you have lots of money. Seek help, girl. No one's mad at it, you know? Do what you gotta do. But it's creepy. So, ooh, poor Meg.
It's crazy how, like, quickly things spiral into the media. But,
yeah, you know. Her family owns, like, some kind of post somewhere. They own some kind of media. So, yeah, I mean, especially with her, no comment. No comment.
Too bad they couldn't stop her from, like, getting all this shit.
I can't.
Yeah.
Oh. So season 2 of Hacks has come out on HBO Max.
It sure has. I already finished it.
You too? Well, there's only 2 episodes, right?
Oh, yeah. I finished the first 2 episodes, let's say. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I think, I don't know. So far, I like the first season better, but time will tell.
Time will tell. It's only 2 episodes in, and, you know, there's always, like, that sophomore slump for everything, you know? This is, like, their second album. It's not going to be as good, but hopefully they find themselves. I really liked it still, so.
Yeah, it's not bad by any means.
Oh, no. It's way better. I mean, not way better, but it's really good.
Uh-huh. It's good, yeah. Speaking of HBO, though, I ended up re-watching The Sex Lives of College Girls. It's actually really, really good. Like... So I know it's weird to say, we already covered it, but, like, the second time I watched it, there was so many, like, subtle things that I noticed that were, like, oh my god, like, that was actually better than I, like, remember it, you know what I mean? So I don't know, for anybody that didn't give it a chance the first time around, I just want to say, like, give it another shot. Also, maybe it's also colored by the fact that I found out that Renee Rapp, who plays Leighton, is queer in real life. That was very exciting for me.
TikTok. So, she's on TikTok.
She's going on there. Yeah,
I'm on TikTok. Yeah, so, like, she's awesome, and she's really talented.
She is. HBO is kind of, like, killing the game in a really quiet way. There's another show called Our Flag Means Death that I've heard good things about. I haven't seen it.
Glow's watching it as we speak.
Really? Is it? Yes. Is she liking it?
Yeah, it's pretty funny and ridiculous, like everything Taika makes. Yeah, it's his sense of humor. It's him all. It's got him all over it.
Not Glo being our like local correspondent for like media.
I will have you know, Glo is like semi-producing my things because for Heartstopper.
She's whispering in your ear. She's an executive producer.
She's the executive producer because for Heartstopper, she started watching it way before me. And I just kind of came by and was like, what you doing? What you watching? And she's like, oh, I'm in like episode 4, but I'll start over for you. And I'm like,
I'm Word. Still taking credit for that fine, though, because I watched it like the day it came out.
So. Oh, yeah. No, that's all you. But I definitely wouldn't have watched it, I guess, as soon had it not been for her going like 4 episodes in and then me being like, what is this? This looks so good. This is the show Maya was
Vico
talking
Ortiz.
About.
Vico Ortiz. That's what you're talking about? Vico?
Yes. Yes. That person.
Yeah, they're the person. I was like, they look so familiar. And they were... They're in something else too. God.
They're in a lot of things.
A lot of research going on today.
I think they were in the Sex Lives of College Girls.
They were.
And they were non-binary in the show, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Shout out to our executive producer, Glo, who watches gay things before me. I'm serious. She really is on it. She's always like, oh, this and that and that and that. And I'm like, what? Like,
I'm going to start like going through Glo to get you to let us cover things.
I never say no.
That's true. I'm very much like, we're going to cover this.
And I'm like, cool, I love that. I'll talk about it for an hour. That sounds great.
Even if you hate it, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna shit on it. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
It's fair. I'm not shitting on your thing today because I think it's important. So I'm not shitting on your thing today.
Even if you did, I think that's fine, you know? Well, I mean, some people, a lot of people, we'll talk about it. Yeah, I'm excited. This should be a nice, lighthearted episode.
This is a cute episode. I love what we're talking about. Should we introduce the topic, even though we kind of already have?
Yeah, today we are covering Heartstopper and Crush.
Woo, gay people.
They fit together like a glove, a match made in heaven.
Yes.
Beautiful. Good job.
Yeah, they have different tones, obviously. One's very American in that it's taking this very... Well, not really, not very American. It's just...
It's a little suspended in, like,
science
fake
fiction
worldness.
I think, you know? They both have a, like, touch of science fiction to them, which I actually really love. I love that both of them exist in these other realities that I just can't fathom, but I'm so happy that they're creating these realities. Like, I love science fiction.
That's, like, the fucking point of doing TV is to not be real.
So. Yes, create a fantasy. I fully want to live in these worlds. Which came out first, though?
Heartstopper came out first.
Okay,
just
perfect.
Just by a smidge.
So perfect. I'm gonna be talking about Heartstopper. If y'all haven't watched it, it's a 30-minute series on Netflix, and it's based on a graphic novel by Alice Oseman. She started it off as like an actual internet web series comic book thing, and it grew a crazy following, and she got it published, and then she sold it to Netflix, and I fuck with it so much. It's only 8 episodes, so it's a like quick binge. It is based in the UK. I believe it was shot in London. I don't think that's like the place that it's supposed to be, but it was shot in London, because the cast is always talking about hanging out in London. Like,
oh, they got money.
They got money. They got a budget. Anyways, so it stars Charlie, It stars Joe Locke, who plays Charlie, the lead. He's kind of like a quiet, sensitive, like soft boy who's recently come out in an all boys school, and the show's definitely showing that he was bullied in the past. He is surrounded by a wonderful group of friends. He has his own little like gang
chosen
of like
family.
Of like, yeah, a found family. We're gonna start with Elle, who is recently transferred to the all girls school because she is trans, because she was getting bullied at the all boys school, and plus she's not a boy, so she shouldn't be there, right? She's played by Jasmine Finney, and she's also gonna star in, I think,
She's gonna be in Doctor Who.
Yeah, she's gonna be in Doctor Who.
Fucking Who. Speaking of UK Netflix shows, yes, super stoked about the new Doctor Who. Oh my god, I'm completely taking over this.
No, no, go ahead. I'm really excited. Oh my god,
I believe you pronounce his name Shuti. But yeah, he was like the gay kid from Sex Education, and he's gonna be Doctor Who. And like, I'm not even fucking kidding. Like, I cried when I found this out. Like, it made me so happy. Because, like, you know, like, how do you... I don't know. First of all, he's so deserving. He's gorgeous. He's an amazing actor. And, but just, yeah, like, having, like, this, like, very queer black kid be Doctor Who. Doctor fucking Who.
Dude, so, like... I don't know. And that's, like, not... They've been, I think, trying for, like, a black Doctor Who for a while. And, like, the fact that it's 2022 and they're barely having their first one, sad, but I'm really happy it's him, you know, like I'm happy. Yeah. I'm not gonna shit on that, but I'm like, damn, like that's, and you know, it's pissed off the fanboys, of course.
I'm so glad that I haven't seen any of it. And then Jasmine Sullivan, that's her name,
right? Oh no, I mean, I my feed is specifically just like K-pop and gay things, or actually it's the same thing. K-pop is gay things, but yeah, I don't see it, but you know, people live in this bubble, and my bubble's wonderful anyways, and so do these characters. They live in this like queer little bubble, their own little family, a found family, where Elle recently transferred, and there's Tao, the protective best friend, played by William Gao. I love him because he's like tall,
the gayest straight boy.
He's like the gayest straight boy, and he's like tall and lanky, and but he's also like not like a stereotypical like nerdy kid or a quiet kid. Like Tao's about that action, and Tao got a big mouth, and I love it. I love to see representation matters, you guys. Yeah. And then there's Isaac, who's quiet, who just like reads a book, and apparently like there's whole YouTube episodes on the books that Isaac reads throughout this like show, and I watched 30 minutes of someone review every single book that really? Isaac reads, and
Isaac is my favorite. Why the fuck did they not focus more on Isaac? He felt like such a throwaway character.
I'll tell you about why Isaac isn't necessarily a throwaway character, but he was a replacement character because he's a stand-in for another character that had a really crazy side story, and they didn't have enough time to actually center that character, so they added Isaac in later, and kind of they didn't really have the amount of time and space and maybe the first season of the show to dedicate to that character, so they just switched it in for Isaac. But we love Isaac. He's amazing. He's our quiet king, and he's knowledgeable.
Like, I noticed in one of the episodes he's reading this book about, like, gender, and I was like, Isaac just seems fascinating.
Gender Explorers. Like, yeah, it's by... Yeah, I'm telling you, I watched 30 minutes of this person review.
I think that link.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll add it, and I'll send it to you, because it was amazing. He read Dune. He read the Dune sequel. He read Gender Explorers. A lot of great stuff, you guys. And I'm hoping that they read Gender Explorers because of their friendship with Elle, because the whole book is about exploring gender and about trans lives and trans stories. And it was really, I don't know, I'm going to send you the link. and shout out to the other co-lead, the love interest, Nick, played by Kit Connor. He's literally called a golden retriever in the show by Tao, so that's the kind of character he is, and he continues, and he's actually my favorite character other than Isaac. I'm biased.
Really, little Ron Weasley?
Ron Weasley, gay Ron Weasley, soft butch Ron Weasley, yes.
Literally, even the way he speaks was so Ron Weasley.
Honestly, it was giving very Harry Potter Ron Weasley fan fiction. Oh my god,
literally. Does he wear glasses? I can't even remember.
No, but the other character has the same Harry Potter hair and the same build and Ron Weasley. Like, I don't know, maybe it came from a fan fiction.
Oh my god, was it a fanfic? No me digas.
She originally wrote these two characters. Oh, more background, you guys. Alice Oseman initially, these two characters are side characters of another series that she did called Solitaire, which is actually based on Charlie, Harry Potter's character, his older sister, who makes small appearances in the show. She wrote like a YA series about her, and they were side characters. Yes, yes, you got to. And they were side characters in her story. And she was like, you know what, I really want to explore these characters. And that's why she began to write them out. And boom, it's super popular. More popular than her series on Charlie's older sister called Solitaire. But that's just fun facts. If y'all want to go read that, y'all should. There's about 4 books right now. I think the 5th one is starting. I think it's only online. It's only like bits and pieces. But there's 4 actual graphic novels of Heartstopper out. And the 3rd book, which this series only covers the first 2 books, the 3rd book, they go to Paris. So I'm really hoping for a second season where they get to explore all the both the girls and boys' school going to Paris together. I think that'd be really cool and interesting. But anyways,
Magnifique.
Exactly. And we were talking French. You were talking French in this episode. And there are side characters of which I find to be completely lovely and full-fleshed, fully thought out, careful characters. I love Tara Jones's character, played by Corinna Brown. She's amazing.
I'm gonna feel that way about every character you name. I'm gonna be like, yes,
I love them, I love them. And then there's my writing is bad. Darcy, hold on.
the girlfriend, Imogen,
is that her girlfriend? I thought her name was Darcy, but I could be wrong. Anyways, Tara's girlfriend, played by Kizzy, that's her first name.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Imogen is the bitch with the fucking...
Ooh, Imogen streak. Is the girl that has a crush on Nick. But yeah, Tara and Darcy are also closeted lesbian couple from the girls' school who befriend Elle. And of course, you know, all the queers find each other. And they start this, like, beautiful friendship. Because, you know, Elle is starting over again. And she's, you know, it's scary, you know, to start over and to be different. But she quickly finds community with the couple, the two girls. And you get to see their love story unfold, like, parallel to Nick and Charlie's story. Nick and Charlie's love story. Of course, they're not, like, the center of it. But even so, like, I loved...
They got a lot of screen time.
I loved how they told their story. It was, like... very careful and very thoughtful, because these characters were dealing with coming out at school and getting, like, harassed online, which, I don't know, is that what the kids are doing now? Is that how they bully each other? Of course it is.
I'm pretty sure.
Instagram comments, you know, block, delete, move. But, you know, not when you're 15. That's a really tough thing. We didn't have to grow up in that world, so God bless. 2 pixel phones. But anyways.
I'm missing MySpace right now, but yeah.
We gotta get log into MySpace. But the story is about Nick and Charlie, and you get dropped into Charlie's story, and at first he is not closeted, but the person that he is secretly seeing, and he's in a situationship with another dude called Ben Hope, played by Sebastian Croft, who is kind of, he's obviously the villain of this entire series, of this entire season, where he is in private, very, you know, kind of using Charlie for his own exploration, but in public, you know, bullying him, acting like he doesn't know him. And, like, queer people can all relate to, like, well, damn, you don't even want to know me in front of, like, your straight friends, like, deeply having to deal with, like, your partner being closeted or your situationship being closeted. And I like how realistic that was, and I like how realistic this show was in telling us, like, no, like, these gay people are definitely getting bullied, but we're moving past that.
But you don't
got
to see it.
Like, we don't have to see it. Yeah, they're not, like, dropping the trauma on you. They're just like, look, this is the reality that kids are facing. But what the story focuses on is Nick and Charlie's love story. And what I love about it, and what a lot of other people maybe don't like, is that, like, for me, I enjoyed that it was an innocent telling of two people falling in love. And I feel in a lot of ways that, like, there was, like, a desexualization to it, which I really love, because they are in high school and they are kids. So I really appreciated that they didn't take it there and they didn't sexualize teenagers. Like, I felt like, you know, everything was about falling in love for the first time and centering love and, you know, being realistic about what that means and what that looks like for kids their age. And it's very, like, refreshing to see like a love story be innocent and be about falling in love with someone for the first time and holding hands and maybe making out, you know, like, ooh, let's get crazy for 15-year-olds. I think that's sweet. And I think that's refreshing in comparison to like, you know, fucking Euphoria and like the hypersexualization of even what you're going to be talking about, which isn't hypersexual. It's just kind of like new wave sexual. I don't understand. That's one of my only gripes with that thing that's happening in Crush, is that it's a little bit like sci-fi in the way that very hippie, very California ideals, the way the parents are raising the children out there, but versus
Californian. So no, I'm just kidding.
I know. Oh my god. You know,
defend it later. I'll defend it later.
Okay, defend it later. But in this one, surprise, surprise, Olivia Colman is the mom. Olivia Colman is Nick's mom.
How could you afford?
I mean, what? Like, I love how I love her because it's so random, but also she does an excellent job of, you know, Nick. I'm gonna spoil some things, Nick. Spoiler alert, skip ahead. When Nick comes out to his mother, it's a very emotional moment, but also at the same time, Olivia Colman, like, yeah, like, of course you would come out to Olivia Colman if she was your mom. Like, you'd be like, yeah, I can do this. But I thought that was a really beautiful scene to show, like, it's showing kids now that coming out is scary, it is serious, but sometimes in the science fiction world where Olivia Colman is your mom and your golden retriever Ron Weasley gay man or bisexual man, excuse me, you can come out and it's okay. And I really love that they're telling kids that now, and I love that this is a story that seems to be like very universal and very like PC. I feel like you'd watch this with like, if you're a parent, you could watch this with your child and you wouldn't feel weird, you know, like it's not hypersexual. It's idealistic, it's beautiful, it's very human, and in telling the story about two people falling in love, and they just so happen to be two little queer boys, and we love to see it.
Yeah, and you know, Olivia Colman has played the very chill mother of a queer kid before in a UK series. I don't know if you remember Skins.
Oh shit, what? She was in Skins?
Yeah, she was Naomi's mom, and Naomi was like a lesbian. Man. Yeah, so like it fit like a glove because she's done this before.
Wow.
And she did quite well. So
mind blown, because now it's like hitting. I tried to like, you know, blank out those like season 3 and 4 of Skins. I tried to like, no, those don't exist to
really
me.
I love those seasons.
No, I just remember their scenes, so I skipped over the parts where I included the mom, because you know, on YouTube it would be like Naomi and Emily, I believe, and I would just watch them. So yeah. I'd be like, oh yeah, I see parts 1 through 35 of all the episodes, you know, like yeah. It would skip over a little bit.
Heartstopper is Skins without the trauma, which is why it feels like a fairy tale. I don't know.
It's amazing. It's amazing. What did you think of like Heartstopper, other than what were you thinking while you watched it?
I was thinking that the same, honestly, a lot of similar thoughts to when I was watching Crush. It's just that it's so, like you said, a little suspended in reality. It does that. I mean, this one has a lot more focus on the struggle with sexuality and the coming out, but nevertheless, it exists in a much more like
safe environment.
Like in a world where you have a Nick that isn't gonna have like all this internalized homophobia and he's a good guy, you know, like,
yeah,
kind of the opposite of what Sex Education did, where they had the sort of Nick character be a complete asshole. So yeah, I mean, it's special. I'll say that. It was very cute and very easy to watch, and I thought it was way too short.
Oh yeah. But, you know, here's hoping for season 2. Like, they're giving it a lot of promo everywhere. So I'm hoping that they put a lot of money into season 2. And usually shows that get a season 1 have to kind of get a season 2. That's kind of written in the contract sometimes. But we're going to find out. And I really hope they do it. I love this show. And a lot of people are saying, oh, I wish I had something like this growing up. And, you know, most of the skeptics will be like, you know, there were stuff like this growing up. You just didn't look for it. And it's true. But also, it's very accessible on Netflix. it's very accessible right now in general to like young queer folk, and I'm just really happy and excited like they get to have something like this. It makes me really happy, and I'm glad it exists, and I think more things like this and what you're talking about should exist forever, because there's space for it, and we need more happy queer stories about queer joy. Like, what a concept. Like,
yeah, definitely. And like the bisexual type of storyline does not get enough like
normalization
in general.
Yeah, like, people don't really talk about bisexuality as much, and it's super normal in the queer community. Like, it's just, we don't,
everybody's bi these days. Yeah, not like, us, but it's not everybody. A big deal.
But anyways, I give this series 5 pandulces. I recommend it to everyone. To everyone, straight people, gay people, your mom, your dad, your uncle, your grandpa, everyone.
Yeah, no notes. It's definitely like gay Harry Potter meets Skins minus trauma. Yeah.
And not just for like the two gay boys, like this beautiful lesbian couple.
The lesbian couple. I love them. I love that whole existence of them. This magical scene on the dance floor.
Oh my God.
Like, it literally, like, shook me to my core, like, when I was watching it. Like, I was feeling exactly what Nick was feeling. It was that moment of representation where you're, like, seeing, like, being queer could be happy.
Could be happy.
They're happy right now, and there's rainbows all over the dance floor for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's animated in the same way, like, a comic book would be. There's parts where there's butterflies and stuff. It's really cute. I love it. It's giving like K-drama, but like
Lizzie McGuire. Remember she had the little animated version of herself on her shoulder all the time.
Oh my God, yes. And then next year they get to be, you know, in Rome, basically. It's them in Rome. No, but hopefully they're in Paris, and I love it. So
very cute.
Yeah.
What would you rate it? I don't think no cafecitos. I enjoyed it very much. Maybe not like whatever something I'm gonna obsess over, but I'm not a young queer boy,
yeah,
so that's probably how it should be. So I can see this being someone's Imagine Me and You or someone's crush or someone's, you know what I mean, like it's very important content.
Oh, the internet is reacting, and the gay boys, this is their Imagine You and Me. Like, they are reacting. There's a bunch of videos on YouTube. It makes me happy
for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I agree with all the, like, not hypersexualizing it, because, like, yeah, there is a lot of that when it comes to any gay media. Like, immediately it's about, like, who's getting it in. So, love that it's about love.
Yeah. Same. A little different from what you're talking about today.
My crush is very not sexualized either. Like, there's some stuff in the dialogue, but, like, you know, they're not... No one is out here fucking, you know what I mean? Like, well, except for, like, the straight couple. But
the
even
straight people
like,
are so annoying.
Yeah, exactly. I love this movie. Crush, let's just get the details out of the way. Crush was directed by Sammy Cohen, this is, like, the first feature they've ever directed. But she does have a lot of credits in the TV world, so not, by any means, not inexperienced. Mm-hmm. The pronouns are she, they, and that's pretty cool. Casey Rackhams, who wrote it with Kirsten King. Both of them are queer, so that's great.
Yes, I follow them. I follow Kirsten King.
Kirsten King, yeah. They both have, like, the writers don't have, like, a ton in their IMDb credits, you know what I mean? It's not like they've been, like, writing up a storm. Like, so all in all, it's a very fresh crowd to this world, and they did really fucking well. Because, like, watch a lot of other directors' first features, let me tell you. It's not going to look like this.
Oh, no.
But what can I say about this movie that isn't a spoiler, right? Because it's, like, it's just really, really fucking gay. And even the straight people are gay. Like, shout out to Tyler. He's the straight best friend. And, one of a few other Latinx representations in this film, and like gay is all hell, but he's the straight man in this.
He's depicting straightness in a very real way.
I really appreciate it. I really, really do. Yeah, I mean, I've just never seen something just so fucking gay. And, like, I mean that in the best way ever, because, like, we get to a point that there's so many gay people in the school that they have, types of gays that are listed. Yep. We have the cool Wiccan gay. What? And then you have the horse girl gay. Yeah, oh, that's right. God. We have horse girls in our crew now. There's the gateway gay.
Gateway.
the one that you go to, like, I guess, try shit out, and she's down. The popular girl gay, which I didn't know was ever going to be a thing. And then the influencer they. And then, you know, there's Gabby's sister, the bi skater girl / athlete / closeted artist, you know, like, just, I love it. I just, like, literally, even the extras, you know what I mean? Like, there's just so few people in this that are just not gay, and that's really cool. So, I don't know. It's just, like, that's watching this movie is what it feels like to be at, like, Klexicon, you know? Like, everyone's just gay.
Oh my god, yes! Klexicon representation. The one time
I went. Shout out.
You're correct, actually. That is how many types of gays are there.
Yeah, you have every single kind of white gay. So,
oh, damn.
No offense.
We were the seasoned ones. Thank you so much.
So I'm just gonna get into it, and I guess, you know, yeah. Warnings for spoilers ahead. I'm not gonna get too crazy on it. It's not. I feel like there's not a lot of huge surprises in this film. Like, a lot of it, you just kind of know what's gonna happen. Like, yeah. Just because of what it is. It's a rom-com, it's a coming of age, and it's just gay as hell. So we have our main character, who's Paige, and she's an artist, and she's, like, struggling to, like, lock, you know, just, like, lock into an emotion in her art and stuff. The thing about this film, though, is that if it was a normal film, it would have had AJ as the main character. So, like, it's not a normal film. And I love that it's not, even though Ali'i, I love you from the bottom of my heart. It's my favorite person in the fucking world. I love AJ. I love the character. But I'm really glad that it's not normal, because, you know, your typical teen rom-com, it has the AJ character who's overshadowed, and, like, the love interest doesn't realize that she or they have been there all along. And, like, but she's not perfect, because she has a big secret, and it comes out just as soon as things are getting so good. But you know what I mean? Like, AJ is the typical main character of a movie like this. And, yeah, you know, her angle would have been, like, the broody, angry gay who expects things to never go her way, so she doesn't try. And, like, you know, you can see it if you, like, think about it.
Oh, no. But this definitely should, like, in another universe.
In our normal world, yeah, it should be her, but it's not. And I kind of like it that way, because, you know, instead we get the POV from the person who is the crush. Because we think this whole time that it's about, like, Paige having a crush on Gabby at first and then on AJ. But really, she's the crush. Paige is the crush. She just doesn't know it. And it's from her point of view. So they, I feel like they're not trying to make it a big reveal that she's going to end up with AJ. I feel like that's pretty obvious, even though they, like, tried to, like, shine all this light on Gabby at first.
It's just not obvious to, like, the main character.
To Paige.
To Paige.
Yeah, exactly. But they have, like, subtle things also in the visuals that hint at it, that it's going to be them too. Like, there's a moment when Paige, like, decides she needs AJ's help figuring out who Kingpin is. I'm talking about this movie like you guys have seen it, so hopefully you've seen it. And, like, when she grabs AJ's hands, like, one of the light bulbs in the back, like, turns on. And it's, you know, it's, yeah, like, and then there's other things, like Paige only being able to hand off the little running stick thing to AJ. And then, like, I don't know, there's a bunch of stuff in the visuals where it's, like, not, like, even trying to pretend that it's anybody else.
No.
So, I think that it works, though, or they make it work because they make you think that Paige is the AJ character, which she's not, but they do it by making her, like, really bad at track and, like, really dorky to where, like, she's falling off of the fence, even though the fence is open, you know, that kind of thing. And
oh my god, her animal yeah. facts.
Her animal facts. And but even that is like very charming, right?
Oh yeah.
And like the only time that she's actually like not keeping her cool is around Gabby. But
relatable.
Yeah, I think it was kind of risky. I think like generally as a rom-com, it was kind of risky to make it from her point of view, because from AJ would have been a more natural route. But like I'm glad that it works, because like, okay, so to keep the plot going, she's supposed to be finding out who King Pun is, and with a side of figuring out what am I going to draw for my CalArts submission. But we don't really give a shit about that when we're watching the movie. Like, no. Like it's fine. Like, let's keep it going, the antics going, but we don't care. They kind of fall short in terms of like what we actually care about, which is just waiting for her to realize that it's AJ. And
because we know.
Yeah, exactly. So in that way, I don't know, it's almost like a happy accident that it worked so well that we didn't care about the plot, because we're looking at it from her point of view, at like the wrong point of view, but it turns right because they did a lot of shit like really backwards. We're like making more gay people than straight people. It's backwards, but it works. So I love it. And it gives you, you know, it's basically telling you that it's going to do that from the beginning, because it says flipping the bird, flipping the script. I don't know.
Look at
that's
you.
Not on purpose. That's me yes. just making shit up. That's not real.
Oh, okay. That's your headcanon. I like
that's
it.
That's just me, like, yeah, fitting it into my agenda, my gay agenda. Another thing I really appreciate about this movie, the dialogue, because it's very annoying. It overdoes it in the way that Mean Girls overdoes it, where, like, the mom is being a little extra supportive. Do you need condoms? Do you need dental dams? You know?
Oh, yeah.
But none of them are, like, doing that thing that a lot of new Gen Z content does, where they're like, slay, girl. Not, you know, like, trying to be very TikTok, like, super slangy, like, type of annoying shit. Shit that in a year we're going to hate. But they don't do that at all. Like, they speak like normal fucking humans. They, you know, in 20 years, this is going to be understandable by an audience, because the same way that Bring It On did that, right? You go back and you watch Bring It On, the way that they're speaking is not like specifically very early 2000s or late 90s. It's just normal. Let's just fucking talk. So I appreciate that. Like, it's just funny shit, and that like it will age really well. Okay, now I'm just gonna get into Gabby a little bit, because I'm a Gabby apologist. Okay?
Oh no! Oh wait, you're not alone. You're not alone.
No, I know I'm not, because I ship her with Paige, and I'm not sorry about it. I'm not gonna be taking notes.
Same. Same. We're in a Gabby apologist podcast.
Yes. Look, Gabby as a character did not follow a normal trajectory of like the wrong person archetype, because once again, nothing in this movie is how it's supposed to be, because we're supposed to like end up hating, right, the wrong one, right, the one that is not the one. But we don't.
We love her
more.
She's awesome.
We love her so much. She's so like sweet to Paige all the time, and like the way that Paige is around her when she literally can't fucking talk like a normal person. It's just cute. It's cute, you know what I mean? Like,
you're not
my
alone.
my favorite fucking moment is when like she's walking away and Paige goes, so long.
So long, farewell.
So long.
Oh my god, dude. Just all of their scenes. I don't know. Like, I'm right there with you. This is a Gabby apologist household and podcast.
Yes.
We loved her. I liked her more, honestly. I really understood. I understood it. Like, you see this character who's like the popular, pretty, like, gay girl, and you're like, okay, first off, this trope never
that's not exist that's brand
this
new
this is a brand
you
new
invented
trope.
It Gabby.
I love the science fiction y'all have created, because this does not exist.
Thank you so much.
In high school it does not exist, but I was very happy that it did. And the way that she is subversive by being kind of like a mess, like, although she wasn't ultimately who ended up with Paige, you rooted for this character a lot more. I mean, I guess I see it like AJ's character, she's beautiful, so of course, right? But
not a lot more, but you didn't hate her the way that you're supposed to. You're supposed to like shit on this character and be like, oh, she's so flawed. But no, you're like, I love you.
You're like, you're flawed and adorable. Like, I still see it for you. And I still get why anyone, I think that's like, what's the cool part is that you can see why anyone would have a crush on her. And, you know, shout out Latinx representation. We see you. You're out here. I mean, yes, we see it and we love it because I don't know. It's so rare, like, that you really get to see, like, the lead love interest, you know, is supposed to be like a Latinx character. And it's Moana. It's Moana, though. Isn't she not like Latina? Okay.
She, like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, they really put this girl who's very Latina with this girl who's other girl who's very Hawaiian.
Yes.
And they made them twin Latinas.
Yeah. I'm like.
But I did do a Google and mm-hmm. Auli'i. Dad is part Puerto Rican.
Okay.
Close enough. We did it, girls.
We did it. We did it, Joe. I mean, you know, we're all like distant cousins of each other. Like, you know, once you're like mixed with like 20 different things, it's kind of, you're kind of everything at this point. Like, being Latinx now is like being anything. You can be anything at
this
point.
It's that fucking meme where they're like, you know, Latinos trying to figure out what to put under race on their standardized tests. Oof. And they're like, you know, Pacific Islanders looking real good.
Yeah. Right now. Yes.
That's Auli'i.
Yes. That's exactly how they casted this movie. And I'm not mad at it. You know, I'm just saying, like, I was like, wait a minute. Isn't that like Moana? Isn't that like, shout out to Rosa. Cause she's been on the pod before. Cause I forgot. I didn't know. I didn't connect the dots. Okay. And they were like, I'm really into Moana. And then I was like, wait a minute. That voice sounds familiar. I'm a little slow. But, like, I really loved what they did. So I'll stop talking now.
Yeah. But, like, back to being a Gabby apologist.
Yes.
Another one of my favorite lines was when Gabby's drunk.
Oof, yes.
Trying to get hot Cheetos.
Yes.
And she's like, and, you know, Paige is like, I'm going to walk you back to your room. She's like, if you want to walk me back to my room, Paige, then that's what we're going to do. Like, how do you not, like, absolutely adore? And then you get this, like, really vulnerable moment. Like, I don't, like I said, this whole movie is a fucking risk because it's very risky making Gabby just absolutely lovable.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a person that I feel like she could have ended up with and we'd be like, all right, yeah, I mean, you know what, like, I get it.
No, we all get it. Why? Because Gabby's like, we get it. She is dream girl status. We understand.
Yeah.
AJ is like, yeah, actually your person that you date, but like, Gabby's dream girl. Like,
she's great. But yeah, but, you know, speaking of like flaws,
nope.
there's a few flaws in the plot that are really fine with me.
Okay.
But really, really funny to think about, because how could the principal and this random coach really suspend Paige without actual proof that she's King Pun?
Ooh.
Like, having the key to an art closet doesn't mean you're vandalizing the school. Like, I don't know.
I think that was honestly one of the few things that made sense about the American public school system. Okay, let's keep it real.
Oh,
let's keep it real. Okay. The school to prison pipeline is real. It exists. And if they imprisoning students, suspending them without proof, that's what, it's not a new look. I've been kicked out of every school I've been to. Yes, they will do that to you. triggering.
That's wild to me.
It's like,
so wild. The other flaw, why can't Gabby ever hear the embarrassing shit that Paige spews out at that party? Like, she's like, huh, what? You heard her.
She was just being nice. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, sweetheart. You might be right.
She's being sweet.
Exactly. So nice to her. And then Paige believing that Tim being in Renaissance Club absolves him of being King Pun. You know, it's just like little things where you're just like, luckily you just don't care enough about these things. You get that it's just moving you to the next moment that AJ and Paige are going to hang out. So with that said, whoever thought of the tub kissing scene and that lighting, I would like to send you flowers because I have no idea how you got away with lighting a hotel bathroom like that.
Wow,
but
yeah.
Bless you, because I didn't even think about it until the seventh time that I watched this, that like a bathroom would never look like that.
Not in a hotel, unless the hotel is like not the hotel. Like, it was beautiful. Great lighting.
It was great. Yeah, and then also the fact that they had a room with one king bed instead of two double beds. Okay, very convenient. Like,
that part.
Y'all are, but yeah, like that right there in particular, that scene with the bed, like, told me, like, yeah, this is very purposely not being over sexualized because, you know,
yeah, no,
it's a bed, it's a hotel.
It was
room.
Cute, yeah, it didn't go there, and I really appreciate that the, like, the actual, like, movie didn't go there. It was just the dialogue that I found cringy, like, about sex. Like, I was just like, oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it was, you know, they're gonna, like, say some dumb shit. I don't know. Like, it's just, it's realistic to me. As long as they don't, like, actually visually sexualize these kids, it's whatever.
Oh, so my problem wasn't with, like, what the kids were doing. It was all Megan Mullally's, like, dialogue that bothered me. Yeah, the
dental dam stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the doing of, like, certain execs, probably.
But, what, Natasha Lyonne and Amy Poehler?
Was it Amy Poehler? Maya Rudolph.
Oh, yeah, Maya Rudolph. Yeah.
It's Maya Rudolph, not Amy Poehler. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I just feel like it's up her alley in humor. But
when not executed by her, doesn't work the same, you know? Like, Megan Mullally has more of, like, you know, the Karen from, like, I envision her differently, and
because of Will and Grace,
because of Will and Grace, and also because of who she was in Parks and Rec. Like, any character that she's ever been has been kind of, like, mean, and she does that so well. Versus,
but she's also so, like, outlandish.
Yes,
and, like, that's what she was as a mom in this, you know.
Oof. Yeah, but to me, it just didn't always work. And I love, and I hate to say that because I love Megan Mullally and most of the things that she does, but I found her dialogue to be cringe in this movie, and that was kind of, like, off-putting for me, and it felt out of place, and it felt like really hippie new wave, like the way that they kind of unnecessarily tried to make her, like, you know, literally that mom who's the meme, who's literally Amy Poehler.
The Amy Poehler. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was the comparison for sure.
But it didn't work for me with her specifically. If it was maybe like Maya Rudolph, it would work, you know? Or even if it was Amy Poehler, I think it would work. But I think Megan Mullally wasn't utilized to her strengths. That's all. I love her. This is not a criticism.
I gotta say,
of her.
I liked it.
Yeah, for me, it just didn't, like, me personally, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And, like,
got it.
I was wondering,
so I was like, this movie's not that sexual, other than, like, the straights.
No, oh my God. And that's so, like, on, like, point too, like, to have the straight people be annoying and to be, like, basically smashing in public and everyone's cool with it. And the gay people are like, we don't even want to hold hands in public, you know? But, like, the gay people are.
No, but the gays were going.
Oh, they were.
Too, at that party.
They were at the party, though, you know? So that was the gayest party I've ever seen.
Seriously.
About high school? I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. How many gay people does this school have? Like, this is wild.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like this teen movie, like, completed a shift, because I feel like, you know, we've been very slowly moving out of millennial to Gen Z, and it's been sort of like a zillennial type of vibe to all these teen movies. Yeah. And this one, I feel like, completed the transfer into Gen Z, because this is just did not have all the regular cringy millennial shit in it, like, at all. To the point where I watched the first half of Booksmart sometime after watching Crush a couple times, and I was like, holy shit, it's dated.
That's about millennials. It's only been high school.
But, you know, it definitely was seeping into the Gen Z world, because they were talking about, like, fucking gender and shit. But, it felt so dated after watching this. But also, this is very much another world. But, that was my previous comfort film was Booksmart. Mm-hmm. And now it's Crush, which is wild. I have a lot of love for it. For, like, reasons of it being so simple and, like, easy to digest.
Oh, I got you. For me, it didn't quite hit as hard. I thought it was cute. I like that it exists. I want more of it. I see how it's perfectly diversely casted. I think it turns so many stereotypical tropes about queerness and straightness and, like, you know, flips it. And I love that. It takes, like you said, the rom-com whole fucking genre and, like, flips that as well. And, you know, who is the protagonist? Who is the love interest? They flip that as well. But even so, I felt like something was off and I don't know what it was. I keep trying to think and I keep thinking maybe it's the dialogue and maybe it's because I'm old. And I can acknowledge that it's just maybe not for me. I really loved it, but I acknowledge that it's not for me. Like, I'm 31 at this point, and I'm, like, super washed and old and married and, like, watching.
My theory was that.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
With you was that, like, you've just been in a relationship a lot that, like, this kind of thing is, like, just not gonna get you like it's gonna get a single folk.
Yes, and I've talked to other single gay people and they were like, yeah, no, it's, I love it, it's hitting. And I was like, yeah, as a washed married person, it does not hit for me. Like, I'm like, because that crush phase of my life is more like gross. If I have a crush now, I want to, like, vomit and die. Like, I don't want to have a crush at 31 on anyone. You're like, I'm just like, ew, that'll go away. Like, I'm like, gross. Wow. Icky. Get it away from me. Because
well, you know, I gotta say, I give this literally a 0.01 cafecito, because how are you gonna have 90% gay characters and yet 90% of the kissing is by the straight couple?
Ooh, like, that part.
My only complaint. That's it.
That part.
Love this movie though. I've seen it 7 times. I don't know that I mentioned it earlier, and that's crazy.
That's wild. Like,
that is a lot.
That's a lot of times to watch this movie.
I admit it. It's a lot of times to watch this movie.
Wow. I think I've watched.
No regrets.
Does this beat Your Imagine Me and You or no? Second.
It's different. It's a different thing. Because Imagine Me and You, like, it hurts a little too much to watch it that often.
Ah.
Like I said, it's a comfort. This is a comfort film for me.
Gotcha.
It's not the same as something that I'm completely in love with. Because on my list, mm-hmm. I was thinking about my list of, like, favorite movies that have come out this year. Uh-huh. It's still Everything Everywhere at Once.
Yes.
And then The Fallout. And then Crush. So.
Oh, it's number 3. Oh, not The Fallout. Yeah. Oh, my God. Oof, that's a heavy one.
Another heavy one. I couldn't watch it that often, but I love it. And I think it's fantastic.
No, Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to be, like, the one for me. And maybe, like, I'm thinking more, like, family trauma versus, like, I have a crush on someone, you know? Like,
which, it's a whole different, like,
yeah.
I can't even put it in the same category.
No.
Like, I love this movie for complete reasons that no one is, like, allowed to talk about film in that way. And no one's allowed to, like, people always want to say, like, oh, this movie is great because of this artistic element. Yeah. Like, no, this movie is good because, like, when I watch it, I feel good.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. It. Not that deep.
Yeah.
That's the best thing. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a cool little, like, you know, you're sad about something happening in life. Just watch Crush. You'll be all right. Like, just watch Heartstopper. You'll be all right. Like, you've had a shit day and you want to change that, you know, just watch a little media escape for
a
little bit.
Watch this. Yes. You know, there's talk of a sequel, and I know it's all conceptual and, like, what? Fans asking for uh-huh. it, but I just thought it'd be fun for us to be like, okay, what's a dream scenario sequel?
Gabby getting with someone else.
Yes!
Let's explore a Latina, the only Latina in this movie. Let's explore that. Like, I love her character, and she seems messy.
You know, I think that would be great, and I think that it'd be perfect as well, because let's face it, getting Rowan and Ali'i in a room together again is not going to be easy.
Oh, Lord.
I'm not going to get into the drama because, one, I don't know. And two, it doesn't matter because the sequel needs to be about Gabby.
Period. Our favorite character. Honestly. Like, imagine, I want Gabby to, like, go through her, like, not opera black girl phase, but, like, I want her to go through her, like, fucking up phase. Like, I want her to, like, date all the wrong people. And then
but I think she's already done that. I wonder if this is, like, her no longer dating to date phase. You know?
Her, like, single and free and just focusing on herself and, like, you know, clear skin bitch. Like, I want that. But I also want her to, like, she's a flawed person and she's so interesting as a character. I just want to see her fuck up more, like, all the time, because she's such a lovable character that I wouldn't care if she was doing the wrong thing. You know, I'd be like, oh, finally a likable, unlikable character. We love to see it. Like, it's so rare. And I feel like she has so much charisma that she could get away with it. Like, she could do a lot of wrong things and I'd still be there watching it. You know, kind of like Michaela Cole did in, like, Chewing Gum. Like, I would love that.
I'd love that. And I also would love to see the return of Chantal the Wiccan Girl. Because that was the biggest plot twist of the whole thing, that she put a spell on them.
She put a spell on them.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, this whole time I thought she was trying to get with Paige. And then at the end, you're just like... And then you tweeted that she was the like, OG. The big,
no one can ship harder than Chantal. Literally. Would love to see that dynamic, too. Just to see how they react around each other. I don't know. There's something there.
Yeah, I want to see her... you know, put more love spells on people. See if she can put one on Gabby to fall in love with someone who's good for
her. Stop. That's great. Let's stop talking. Let's let these writers
you need to go write this. Please.
I can't. Kirsten and Casey, you guys, get on it. If you need a writer's assistant.
Yeah.
If you hire need a PA, if you need a second AC, if you need a sound. Like, let me the fuck know, bro. I'll do anything.
She'll be there.
I'll be there for no. Yeah, I really like this movie. I'm stoked, and if a sequel happens, let me tell you, I'm gonna watch that shit.
Yeah, I would too. I give it 4.5 panluces. It's almost perfect, but it's just missing. I don't know what, and it's my fault. You know, it's not the fault of this movie. I acknowledge that I'm an imperfect person. But I really acknowledge how important and how lovely this film is for a lot of people. And I love that it has everything that I love and everything that I asked for. So it's a 4.5 Banduza movie. So love it.
Fair enough. Yes. All right, guys. Well, if you want to support these gays, please head over to patreon.com/CYC podcast, where we have a bunch of extra content. And yeah, support if you can. If not, we also have merch.
Yes.
I'll put the link in our everything. And we have notes for most of the shit that we talked about today on our website, hopefully, probably.
Yes.
And yeah, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We'll try to tweet and post more gay shit at CYC Podcast.
Yes.
And my personal stuff is at MYTE Panda, Mike the Panda.
Yeah, mine is at Fried Babita on Twitter. Go give me a follow. But yeah, we love y'all. Y'all are the best. Watch more gay shit, please, and tell us about it. Bye.
Bye.